I'm Rod Hill.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one fat-ass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
So the only people that are crying are the mediocre white boys.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. Would you believe that there is a government agency in the Northwest that paid almost $100,000 per child to put kids in preschool? I'm going to document this well. And then it gets worse than that, because there was an audit of the program, and the Secretary of State, one of the only Democrats to ever come on this program from an elected office position in the last 30 years, Tobias Reed, they did an audit of this program. And they know the four preschool providers, private companies, that got some money. They got a lot of money to educate a very small number of kids. And did the Secretary of State, when they released that audit from the audits division of the Secretary of State's office, did they tell the public the names of the companies that got paid these obscene amounts of money to educate almost no kids at all? They did not. They kept them secret. And yet some enterprising reporters, I wish I could say I was the one who did it, but I was not. It was the folks at Willamette Week. They dug into the records and they talked to one of the whistleblowers and they found the names of the companies. And then the story gets even worse. But let me get to that part of it. A little bit of self-dealing from somebody in government with financial ties to the schools that were getting the money. Let me get to all that in just a moment. Welcome to Wednesday on the Radio Northwest Network. It's a pleasure to be with you. We're glad to serve Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. And if you want to jump into the conversation, and I may well get some naysayers today, it's easy to do. 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we put you first in line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you care to, we'd love to have you vote in our X poll. Now, the X poll is put up every day, a brand new poll question every day out of the news of the day. Guess what? The Chinese communist-controlled TikTok. Yeah, they haven't resolved that situation yet, but they have announced today a thing called Footnotes, which they call a crowdsourced fact-checking system that is similar to the community notes on X and Meta. Well, I see a problem with that, because at least with X and Meta, you've got private companies. Meta used to be Facebook, now it's Meta. TikTok is controlled by the Chinese communist government. Now, how are you to know, when you see a crowdsourced thing like Footnotes, whether or not that is actually people who are paying attention to TikTok? I refuse to have anything to do with TikTok. It is not on any of my devices or the devices that family members bring into my home. I don't want to be part of a Chinese communist spy device, and that's exactly what TikTok is. But when they put Footnotes on it and they say, oh, this is how we're going to make sure that all the information that's put on TikTok is fact-checked by the people who use TikTok. The problem is, since it's controlled by the Chinese communist government, how hard would it be for a government in that position to have footnotes added and you would have no way of knowing, was this added by one of those Chinese communist bots out of Beijing, or was it added by somebody who happened to see a posting on TikTok and said, that's not accurate, I'm going to put a footnote on that and point out that it's accurate? In other words, by having TikTok in America, and it shouldn't be in America, by having it owned by the Chinese communist government, and if TikTok is, I know a lot of you are fans of TikTok, that's okay. But it should be owned by an American company and not answerable to the Chinese Communist Politburo in Beijing. As long as it is, you've allowed a spy device on American soil that is spying not just on government, but spying on all of us simultaneously, and then to allow them to put up footnotes and say, this is how we're going to steer information. If we want Americans to be for something or against something, and don't think just political candidates, think about wind power, solar power, about American energy policy, about any of those things. The Chinese Communist government has already been doing a lot of things in our country to try to steer public opinion and even steer the direction of policy. And why? Because depending on how policies go in this country, China makes a pile of money, America goes to the poorhouse. And that is exactly how simple it is. You can find the X poll. Should we trust the Chinese Communist Party tied TikTok to police misinformation in America? If you think that I distrust Barack Hussein Obama and Joe Biden and the Democrat Party to be policing information in America, I trust them probably more than I would trust the evil Chinese, because I know what they're in for. They want China to wipe out America economically, militarily, and in every other way that they can. So the question is, should we trust them? My answer to that would be no. You can find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Getting myself all choked up. It's brought to you today by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, let me get to the particulars of this story. There is a crazy notion that preschool actually improves education outcomes. Let me just tell you that every academic study out there says that preschool is basically very expensive daycare. And now some of you are saying, no, my kids are learning how to do 1, 2, 3 and ABC and colors and words and all that. You mean all the things that parents used to teach kids? But with that aside, if you say, well, if we put kids in preschool, they'll do better when they get to elementary, middle, and high school. The point is, every single study that's ever been done says that does not happen. That if you take a group of kids and put them in preschool, funded by the government, paid for at the most expensive rate, that the kids who got preschool do just the same in later schooling as the kids who got no preschool at all. Now, you may not like that, because I know why the unions like it. It means more union membership. I know why the Democrats like it, because more union membership means more political donations. I know why parents like it, because it's child care paid for by somebody else. In other words, you mean you'll take care of my kid for a couple of years and teach them ABC and 1, 2, 3 and what various colors are and words and all that, and I don't have to pay for it? Somebody else is going to pay for it, all the other taxpayers. That's exactly what it is. But then it gets worse than that. You've got a lady by the name of Leslie Barnes. Leslie Barnes is a government apparatchik. She is the director of Multnomah County's Preschool and Early Learning Division. Now, if you thought that Nancy Pelosi was bad for insider trading, Leslie Barnes, director of Multnomah County's preschool program, is also the owner of one of the preschools. And guess what? That preschool got a grant for more than $800,000. And they said, with that, we're going to provide preschool for 63 kids. Only they didn't. They provided preschool, the reports vary, either 8 or 9 children. That works out to almost $100,000 a child. Now, I understand if you say, well, we believe in the program, Multnomah County voted for it, the taxpayers agreed to pay for it, but why would you pay $800,000 to educate 9 kids or 8 kids? If they only educated 8 or 9 kids, they should get paid for 8 or 9 kids, not $833,494. It sounds like a little bit of insider trading. And oh, by the way, we got to ask Secretary of State Tobias Reid the next time he comes on, why, when they did that audit and they knew the connection to the Village Child Care Enterprises owned by Leslie Barnes, who's also controlling the money at Multnomah County for preschool, why didn't they tell the public? You've got the Lars Larson Show. Summer is...
People all-
always ask Lars if he wants to run for public office, like president.
Do you know how much power I'd have to give up to be president?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know he got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Well, Tuesday's earthquake and the tsunami warnings that followed offer the Pacific Northwest just a bit of a warning. The Tembler near Russia's Kamchatka Peninsula at about 8.8 is about the same magnitude as the quake that is predicted to happen someday in the Cascadia subduction zone off Oregon's coast. Well, we best be ready for it. Geological experts say the Cascadia quake, when it comes, in a worst case, would generate a wave 100 feet high on the Oregon coast. Sadly for citizens, the folks in charge of planning for that disaster are the same people mismanaging just about every other problem that we see in the Northwest. Imagine Governor Kotek, who on a daily basis demonstrates her incapacity to handle relatively tame problems like housing, wildfires, mental illness, and addiction in her own household. How would she cope with a disaster on that scale? My old hometown of Tillamook sits so close to sea level that annual flooding is actually written into flood days on the school calendars. Almost 200,000 people live on the North Oregon coast. How fast can they expect any help from Salem when just a few thousand people burned out by the Sandiam Canyon fires 5 years ago? They're still waiting, so they would probably know. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. By the way, we just got word a couple of minutes ago, literally, the entire state of California is breathing a gigantic sigh of relief because Kamala Harris, that well-known oratorical speaker, Kamala Harris, who's run for president a few times and lost every single time. Kamala Harris has now announced that apparently California has suffered enough. She will not be running for governor next year. Our question of the day, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery. Get better fast. Multnomah Medical Clinic. I want to offer this up to you. A coalition of Democrat attorneys general is waging a court battle to prevent the Trump administration from obtaining food stamp data on millions of recipients. Attorneys general from Oregon, Washington, and about 19 other states are suing now to withhold this data from a federal program from going to the federal authorities so they can track down all the people on the SNAP program who are not entitled to it, but they are still getting it anyway. And you wonder, is that the job of the Attorney General of Washington State? And is that the job of the Attorney General of Oregon? I don't think so. And apparently citizens are going to have to let them know they're not happy that that's what they're doing with their time. My favorite post on X today from PDX Real. ODOT, you know, the troubled agency that made the billion-dollar boo-boo and then ran itself so short of money, they started laying off blue-collar workers as fast as they could. Well, PDX Real points out, ODOT isn't planning to lay off the five executive directors of the agency. They're not touching project managers, consultants, or the DEI department, but they are planning to lay off maintenance crews. You know, the folks who actually fix the roads. And remember, ODOT has added more than 400 positions in the last 4 years. So it's an agency that has grown like crazy. But apparently when the pink slips come, they do not go to the white-collar workers. They go to the blue-collar workers. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
Well, I'm going to actually hand out two Daily Grills today because they are so deserving. Consider example number one. What do you do, asks the Taxpayers Association of Oregon, when your middle schools are literally the worst middle schools in all of America? Well, you hide the problem. Now, what do they do? Oregon's middle school scores ranked 38th in math, 31st in reading. So what have they decided to do? They get away with letter grades. That is, the old-fashioned grades where you got an A or a B or a C, or if you're really not that bright or didn't apply yourself, you got a D or an F. They're going to get rid of the letter grades. Well, what's going to take their place? The teachers who are failing to teach the kids are going to do what are called assessments. As Taxpayers Association points out, kind of like Yelp. You get a review, but unlike Yelp, you're not going to see any five-star ratings. The unrated scheme takes all the clarity out of grading. It promotes pushing failing students to the next level where they're going to fail some more. It's also a bureaucratic burden to the teachers. And all of this coming from an Oregon school system that has one of the shortest school years in America. In fact, the last time I checked, they had the shortest school year in America. So you say, we can teach your kids. We can do it in a record amount of time. We're just not going to do a very good job. Now, the second grill I want to give to the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper. They ran a big story that I read at about 5 o'clock in the morning this morning. It was about eviction court. And it was actually set up as a boo-hoo story to say, don't you feel sorry for all these people who find themselves in eviction court? Well, when I read the headline, I thought, no, I don't feel sorry for them. I've rented houses. I've rented apartments before. When I rent a house, I understand I have to pay the rent. If I don't pay the rent, I get kicked out. In fact, a long time ago, decades ago, when I was a small landlord, I had a duplex. I occasionally, maybe twice in 10 years, had to serve eviction papers. Why? Because people didn't pay the rent. And then in the middle of the story, they quote somebody saying the system is set up against most regular people. Now, that one should have failed, but as we know, the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper is going through a transition in its editor. Top editor Therese Bottomley is leaving. I don't know who's going to replace her. But the minute you see a quote like that, the system is set up against most regular people. Let me ask you this question. Do most regular people who rent a place to live, an apartment or a condominium or a house, do most regular people pay the rent? The answer is yes. In fact, even during the pandemic, I was kind of surprised pleasantly that during the pandemic, the number of people who stopped paying the rent was about 8%. That means the other 92% were paying the rent on time. So do most regular people pay the rent? Yes. Who are the 8% who end up in eviction court? Well, they're the ones who don't pay the rent. And what the story was all about was a young lady who's going to college and she doesn't have a lawyer to represent her. You don't need a lawyer. You need to pay the rent. Now, our best email of the day brought to you by Cap Concrete Coatings. Turn your garage, patio, or driveway from ugly and rough to beautiful and tough. They did it for me, and the result is beautiful. Check out CapConcreteCoatings.com or 855-CAP-THAT. Now, this one comes in unsigned about the tsunami yesterday and the Russian earthquake and the threat of a Cascadia quake. An unsigned listener writes, the whole New Yorker article that scared everybody half to death about this was a scam. A 25-year-old rookie reporter from the New Yorker comes out, gets lobbied by the then Seaside School superintendent who wanted a $100 million bond to build a new school. His entire pitch, which became the basis of a stupid article that won a Pulitzer, was that if there was ever a really big earthquake, the destruction would be so huge it would kill 25% of everyone west of I-5 and total all the property. Yeah, not true, not likely, and the earthquakes don't come that often. It is a Wednesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland. Donald Trump with a warning to Hamas at the Republican Jewish Coalition Conference.
If you spill a drop of American blood, we will spill a gallon of yours.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. On a Wednesday, we love to talk to the managing editor at Willamette Week, Aaron Mesh, who joins me now. Aaron, listen, I've had a number of people already this morning email me and say, I don't really care about the Trailblazers. Why is this a big deal? And why is the city involved in it? I had more of the reaction of hang on to your wallet because the city could lose the Trailblazers to another city. That's one more blow against a city that's already driven itself very far into the ditch. And they are now the proud owners of what could be a giant white elephant should their main tenant leave the Moda Center. And they'll be stuck with, I don't know, they'll be stuck with a piece of property they can't do anything with. Am I wrong in any of that?
No, you're not. And I think that this is a story that should matter to people whether or not they get excited about Trailblazers games or not. The amount of money that having that arena and that team in the center of town brings to Portland is an enormous amount of money. I don't have the number in front of me, but it is in the story that the number is a very high. And the loss of the team, which is a very realistic proposition, would be devastating to the economic future of Portland.
Okay, but there's a second devastation that I'm more concerned about. A couple of years ago, I think it was a couple of years ago, when the city announced, hey, the Blazers just sold us the Moda Center for, you know, some rock bottom price. I think they got another piece of property with it, and the whole thing was $7 million. Oh, so you bought a $300 million when it was built stadium or arena for $7 million. Sounds like a smoking good deal, except for two things. The minute the city bought it, the property no longer was subject to property taxes. That was a loss of millions of dollars. And number two, the minute it needs rehab, and apparently the Moda Center is, you know, 30 years old, it needs a complete renovation. There you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars if you take some of the other arena renovations around the country. And now the city owns that problem. And then they've got the Blazers saying, we may leave if somebody buys us. The new owner may move the team somewhere else with league approval. And the Blazers and their new owner can say to the city, pump a couple hundred million bucks into that place that you now own, or we're leaving. And that will probably be a very realistic threat. So that leaves the taxpayers on the hook one way or the other. I mean, one way, they got to put a couple hundred million bucks into it. The other way is the Blazers leave and the city's left with a giant white elephant.
Aren't all they? Of this strikes me as a correct understanding of the story that I published today, yes. So the five-year bridge agreement that the city and the Blazers cut a year ago, I think it's very difficult to look at that agreement, particularly when it comes to the city now being the owner of Moda Center, because previously the Blazers were the owner of Moda Center. And by selling that property back to the city, it does a couple of things. One, it places the city as the responsible party for upgrading that facility or maintaining even just upkeep of that facility were the Blazers to leave. And the second thing is that it essentially means that the Blazers no longer are contracted to play at Moda Center after the year 2030. So you now have what is essentially a portable asset, and then you have a piece of property that is without the team that plays inside it all but worthless.
Okay, but let me ask you, when trust fund kid multimillionaire Ted Wheeler was mayor, because that's when the deal was cut, was he too stupid to see the implications of the city taking over the ownership and having the team leave and the city is on the hook, or the team stays and demands hundreds of millions of dollars of fix-up to a stadium that's worthless without a team in it? Did he not see the writing on that wall?
I couldn't tell you what the mayor or his advisors were thinking on that question. I honestly don't know the answer to that.
Because it kind of seems like they walked themselves right into a corner. The Blazers didn't want to own it. It was kind of an albatross. And now that they freed the albatross, they can sell the team, and the team can be moved anywhere you want. Whereas if the new owner was buying the team and the center, they'd have to say, well, we either figure out how to fire sell and eat the loss on this property. And I don't know how you do that. Probably the same way the Big Pink got fire sailed for one-ninth of its value 10 years ago, but at least it would be somebody else's problem, and they'd still be paying property taxes on it. Instead, Wheeler walked us right off the edge of a cliff, in my view.
It does look to me like a very classic birthright for bowl of pottage kind of deal. Yeah.
I'm glad somebody else remembers that, too, because that's why God didn't like Enoch. So so what is going to happen with this? How do you see this playing out?
Well, I think that it's very likely. I mean, there's a lot of speculation, right? But it's very likely that the team is going to be sold sometime around the midwinter of this coming year is my expectation.
Okay.
And that deal might be announced after the NBA season is over. I'm going to throw out an estimate. I think the team's going to sell for around $5 billion.
Wow.
The new owner is highly unlikely, unless it is a conglomerate that is backed by half a dozen or a dozen local multimillionaires and billionaires, the new owner is very likely to be someone from a different city who doesn't have a lot of emotional ties to Portland. And then we will begin a negotiation about whether or not he or she feels that the city is making a generous enough, and the state for that matter, are making a generous enough offer of public dollars to renovate or replace Moda Center. And that will be the crux of the issue. It will be a purely economic decision based on whether or not the new owner thinks that that he or she is getting their money's worth in terms of the building.
Okay, so the taxpayers end up on the hook. And the other piece of this, Aaron, you saw the news about Intel this week. They're in a bad shape, and they're the biggest manufacturing employer in the state of Oregon. And so you've got they're in hard times right now. And the state's in hard times, and the Big Pink just sold for, you know, 1/10 of its value just a decade ago. And the state continues to lag behind the rest of the country. Even if somebody said, we're going to buy the team, we've got the city to pony up $300 or $400 million for a complete renovation, hang that on the taxpayers. And then we're going to stay here. Who is it that's going to be buying all the very expensive skyboxes and seats to fill the arena if somebody wanted to try and keep the team here?
I think that's not as much of a problem as you might imagine.
Okay.
This is not really a luxury box era for the NBA. And if you look at the Intuit Dome down in Los Angeles, how they've done stadium pricing so that, like, the seats are graded on different levels, I don't know that I think that, like, the lack of very rich people in Oregon is going to be a significant problem. Also, I think if you look at the number of middle class people in Oregon, the number is going up. I don't know that I see that problem. While not denying that this is a low period for our city and state, I don't know that I think that, like, a lack of a fan base is going to, or a lack of a fan base that can afford to pay for a seat is going to be the issue.
And then the question is going to have to be, should lawmakers do the jock tax the way they already sold the state on, let's buy a stadium for a Major League Baseball team that doesn't exist yet, and we'll do it based on taxes that would be levied on ball players. And they said, well, why don't we do the same thing for the Blazers? We'll divert all the monies they've been paying to Salem, to the state treasury, and we'll hang that extra expense on the taxpayers as well and use it to build a new stadium and give a gift to a multi-billion dollar ownership or ownership group.
This is a negotiation that takes place in every city every time that a new owner comes into town, especially when the arena is old. You look at San Antonio, which has ponied up about $500 million to keep the Spurs in town. You look at Milwaukee, which did similarly for the Bucks. It's always a very ugly process, and the public is always held hostage.
Except in San Francisco, where they managed to build a ballpark with almost no public money involved in it at all, which proves that it can be done. That's Aaron Mesh. He wrote the story for WWeek.com. You can find the story there. Glad to be with you. I'll get to your phone calls and emails in just a moment. If you've got a moment, vote in our X poll. You'll find the poll question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Hey, are you...
Some solid advice from Senator John Kennedy.
Look, if you hate cops just because of the cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. This segment of the program brought to you by 540training.com. Concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense. Find them online at 540training.com. And our X-Poll question today, should we trust TikTok tied to the Chinese Communist Party to police misinformation in America? It's one of the craziest ideas I've ever heard of, but apparently TikTok today announced the public launch of what they call Footnotes, which they say is a crowdsourced fact-checking system similar to the Community Notes feature on X and Meta or Facebook. Well, the problem with it is Communist China controls TikTok, which means if you look at the footnotes and you say, well, in the footnotes, it says this information is all a bunch of baloney. Do you know that that's coming from a crowdsourcing, or is it actually coming from the folks in Beijing? I would suspect the latter. Let's go to Gordon, who's a naysayer. Hey, Gordon, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind on a Wednesday?
Well, Lars, I debated you this before. You know, I'm sort of up the freeway here in Seattle, but this stadium thing, when you mentioned this thing a minute ago, that you're giving a gift to a billionaire.
Yep.
And I'm just, let me make my point. It's the surrounding, it's okay to do that if the surrounding businesses around it will grow.
Okay, can I ask you a question, though, Gordon? Because I know this benefits the hotels, it benefits the restaurants, it benefits the bars. Okay, but how does it benefit the average citizen who doesn't go to ball games, doesn't have the money to go to ball games, and doesn't run a business that benefits from it? How does that?
Totally. It benefits them because I live out in the country now, and I realize people like to go into the city to have fun. Like, you know.
But what if you don't go to ball games? Should we subsidize? Let me ask you a question. There are people who like to go to movies. We don't subsidize movie theaters. People like to go to all kinds of different events. They aren't all subsidized.
Movie is not a city. You get flustered.
Movie is not a city. You've never heard of somebody going out for dinner and a movie. So you could argue that when somebody brings a theater in. Okay. Gordon just wants to interrupt me, so I'm going to skip past that. Let's go to Jeff, who's a naysayer on TikTok. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program. Are you one of those people who likes TikTok?
No, I don't even have TikTok, and I've never used it. But
neither have I.
I'm not naive enough to pretend that Apple, Google, Meta, all these people are doing exactly what TikTok is doing here. The government is doing it. We are recorded and observed every single thing we do in this country, and it seems like you're pretending that isn't happening already.
I'm not pretending it, Jeff. We've talked about this at length on the show, that during the Biden administration especially, there were decided efforts by the government to say to Meta and Facebook, we don't like that information, whether it was about the pandemic or the jab, whether it was about Iraq or Iran. And they would tell those various social media companies, take that information down. Now, we know that was done. We've talked about it on the show. I'm not pretending that Meta and Facebook don't do the same kind of thing. But in this case, you've got an entity in TikTok that is controlled by the Chinese Communist government. In the case of Meta and Facebook, they're at least arguably private companies, especially in the case of
X. They're communists. That's not true, Lars. They may be owned by a private business, but don't be fooled. Those guys were colluding with what would have been a communist government if Donald Trump hadn't won this last election. And look,
fair point.
You can mention jet ski on your phone right now and then go turn on your internet and there's a jet ski ad. Every single person is being spied on every single day by every device, every camera.
So what would you suggest as a solution to that?
Well, there is no solution. It is what it is. And if you don't want certain information about yourself record it, then don't put it in the public domain.
Well, and I agree with that, but Jeff, the bigger problem I see isn't just the spying on you. And in the case of Meta and X, it's more about commercial. They want to sell you something. I get that. But in this case, when you had Facebook and others participate in bending people's point of view, whether it was about the Hunter Biden laptop or whatever it happened to be, at least you can haul those people up in front of Congress, question them, and we could find out proof that they had done this kind of manipulation. We will not be able to do that with TikTok, will we?
Yeah, but you know what, Lars? Look at all the TikTok isn't just about the Chinese government. It's become a platform where people earn money, lots of money, and it's part of capitalism. And so I don't agree that TikTok should be sold to an American company. I don't think any other American company is more right.
If you're saying it's about making money, people make money on YouTube, they make money on Meta, they make money on X. So why do we need TikTok in this country controlled by the Chinese government?
Why not? Because if you said,
is TikTok the only place that influencers can make money, or could they make the same amount of money
on
any other social media?
Yeah, but that's not the point. The point is that the American government is doing exactly, and American corporations are doing exactly what you're saying the Chinese people shouldn't be able to do. They do it every day in our backyard.
But it's not the Chinese people, it's the Chinese government.
Tons of money on TikTok, and you're taking away their livelihood.
Well, and they won't switch to some other kind of social media. I find it hard to believe that if somebody's an influencer on one social media account and it goes away, that they're not going to go to one of the alternatives, preferably one not controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. Jeff, you're a good naysayer. Thanks. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
Please, ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
So the only people that are crying are the mediocre white boys.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. I've been looking forward to talking to Washington State Senator John Braun. John is the head of the Washington State Senate GOP caucus, and I'll bet he can put some real information in on this issue. And that is, Senator, I've noticed that, I mean, it's not news when you say the Democrats are running around screaming and yelling like their hair's on fire. But they are. They're doing it about Medicaid. And they seem to be concerned that under Donald Trump, Medicaid is going to be limited to only the people who actually qualify for Medicaid, and that it will not be paid to deadbeats who won't get a job, to illegal aliens, and to doctors who sexually mutilate children. And that seems to be their concern. Do I have that about right?
I think you got about right. I mean, and what was done at the federal level in the Big Beautiful Bill, the way it affects states, it simply adds some accountability, make sure we're not delivering Medicaid dollars to people who do not qualify, and make sure we preserve the Medicaid program for the folks who really need it. Just as you said, children, elderly, disabled, pregnant women, or women with young children. That's what it's made for, and we should preserve it for that reason.
So why are they objecting?
I mean, in Washington State, it's a distraction. Look, we just finished a session this year where they've been pretty hard on the healthcare system. They added significant new taxes to our hospitals and our healthcare providers. They added a requirement so that the hospitals can no longer negotiate with the state on the cost of healthcare, which is going to push more and more cost onto private insurers and put more and more rural hospitals in financial difficulty. And instead of focus on things they did that went into effect this month, they want to distract the public and say, hey, this is all a federal problem. That's not the case. Our problems in Washington are made in Washington. We should deal with them here.
Well, and in fact, are they willing to do that? Because it sounds like having passed the biggest tax increase in Washington state history and then immediately announcing they're going to be $700 million short or so heading into next year's legislative session, that they seem to just be trying to grab onto all the money they can and then constantly tell us over and over again that they are they're broke, that they're flat broke, and we've got to give them more.
Yeah, let's just be honest. We have an enormous spending problem in the state of Washington. We can absolutely deliver the services our citizens need with the revenues we have. Frankly, with all the big increase, we could have done it without the big increase in revenue and taxes that they put into place this year. We showed that. We put together a budget. The Republicans put together a budget. It's called the Save Washington Budget to deliver essential services across the state with no new taxes. They chose to go a different route. They just spent more money that they couldn't afford, tried to pay for it in taxes, and put themselves in a terrible position going into next year and the budget concerns we're going to have to face.
I mean, I'd almost think, Senator, that if they really wanted to say, we need Medicaid, it's for the poor, it's for young women, you know, mothers with children, you know, who aren't expected to meet the work requirements because they have kids. In fact, a single dad with a kid would not be expected to do it. But for everybody else, for the illegal aliens, for the mutilating Mengele doctors who want to mutilate children, they don't get the money. And for the deadbeats, the ones who say, I don't have any children, I'm able-bodied, I'm working age, I'm not a child, I'm not elderly, I'm not disabled, but I don't feel like getting a job. Fine, no Medicaid for you. And they want to, and I don't see, think it's unreasonable to cut those people off. And if they do, it preserves more of the money you would have spent on them to pay for the people that we actually agree Medicaid is for.
Yeah, simply, I mean, if you cut through all the fear-mongering on this, right, these changes simply add very reasonable, I'd say even light, work requirements. 20 hours a week for able-bodied adults, meaning no disabilities, no dependents under age 13. These are folks who can and should go to work. They can also volunteer. They also go to school. They also be looking for work. There's a lot of reasonable exemptions in there to make sure everybody has a chance to do it. And frankly, we don't know yet what, you know, some folks may decide to do that, and good for them. But instead of understanding the facts and just dealing the fact with it, this adds real accountability to the program, they would rather fear monger.
I mean, it does.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Senator.
I was going to say, and it does other things that are really reasonable, like make, have people verify they're eligible twice a year. Not a hard requirement. Make sure that people aren't signed up in two different states, so we're paying, you know, collectively we're paying for twice the health care. They're not getting any extra health care. Why is that unreasonable? Nobody thinks that's unreasonable. This is entirely reasonable stuff that we are, we Washington, the state of Washington, is asked to do as we administer the Medicaid program.
You know, but Senator, I have this sneaking suspicion about the issue you just mentioned, which we've talked about before as well, the double payments. And people would say, well, hold on. If you're signed up for Medicare in, say, Idaho, but you're also signed up in Washington, and you say, why are you signed up in two states? You know who I think that benefits? Tell me if I'm wrong. It benefits doctors, hospitals, and other healthcare institutions, because they still get the money, even though there's no care being offered. So if they say, we'll cover this population of people for this much money, if some of those people are now being cared for in another state, and that state is getting Medicaid money for it as well, if the institution in, say, Coeur d'Alene or Boise is still getting the money, it sounds like the Democrats are listening to their donors among the hospital associations. Most of them are nonprofits, and they're saying, keep the money coming. We want the double payments. The double payments are going to someone. Now, they aren't going to the patient. That means they're going to the institutions, and those institutions don't want to lose those dollars, even though they're being paid, in some cases, literally for doing nothing.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Somebody's getting double paid. I doubt if in many cases it's the actual provider. It's more likely the managed care organization.
Yep.
But whoever's getting double paid, we can't run the program like this, right? It's not, and any suggestion that, oh, we have to keep it this way because it's the only way it works is nonsense. We need to get away from mismanagement of the program. And if in the end that shows that we have a shortfall somewhere, well, let's go deal with it. But we can't hope to right the ship by pretending it's okay when it's very clearly not okay. In Washington State, the auditor, the democratically elected Democrat auditor, says we have roughly $150 million of potential savings from folks who are dual enrolled. We can't look the other way on that. That has to be addressed if we're going to properly run the program.
And by the way, is there any chance in the last 1 minute I've got, it's turned out that the Climate Commitment Act and this carbon tax was exactly the slush fund we thought it was going to be. Any way to rein some of that back in?
I think it's going to take people in the state of Washington to get involved, and you're 100% right. You know, they're spending money on special interests. Almost none of it is going to reduce carbon, the supposed mission. And even where it is reducing carbon, it's at an enormously high price. It's a terribly, right now, today, it's a terribly run program. We have been successful in getting more visibility on the results, and I think that will lead, I hope that will lead, to people paying more attention and demand more actual accountability in the program.
Hey, Senator, thanks very much. I appreciate the time.
You bet.
That is Washington State Senator John Braun, the head of the Washington State GOP caucus. Coming up in just a moment, I want to talk about car charging ports. And you say, well, why? Because Joe Biden authorized and the Congress authorized $7.5 billion to fund car charging ports for people who own electric cars. Would you like to take a guess at how many actual chargers they've installed in the last 4 years? It's going to knock your socks off. Coming up in a moment on the Lars Larson Show.
Ha ha! Team Kissin on Hamas.
For years now, many of us have been warning that the barbarians are at the gates. We were wrong. They're inside. There are positives as well. I mean, say what you want about Hamas supporters. At least they know what a woman is.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Wednesday. Always glad to take your calls. I want to talk about electric car chargers and about the charging ports that were part of that big plan. Not the big, beautiful bill. No, this was a Joe Biden special under what they called the Inflation Reduction Act. The crazy idea of calling something an Inflation Reduction Act when, in fact, it just spent money like crazy, did not reduce inflation, not one little bit. But one piece of that had to do with building electric car chargers. I want to talk about what we know is the latest information on that. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the head of the line, as we always do, at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. And oh, by the way, vote in our X poll. You're going to find a brand new poll question every single day of the week. And we try to keep it fresh, keep it to the current new information. TikTok today has announced the public launch of Footnotes, which they say the Chinese communists who run TikTok is a crowdsourced fact-checking system similar to X or Meta, formerly Facebook. They made that announcement today. Now, as you understand, TikTok is owned by ByteDance. ByteDance is a Chinese company that is controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. So when they announce, we're going to have footnotes, that means that the people who take part in TikTok will be able to supply information to fight misinformation by correcting those things. Just assume that it's all under the control of Beijing. And I've taken the point before. Callers have said, well, Lars, don't you think that X and Meta do the same kinds of things? They do. I'm not going to deny that. But at least when X, a private company owned by Elon Musk, if they engage in manipulation of information, Musk can get hauled up in front of the Congress and questioned under oath by the United States Congress, our representatives. When it comes to TikTok, you don't get that. So not only is TikTok a spy device for China, but it's also a way to manipulate public information and public opinion in the United States. If you're worried about the Chi-Coms or the Russians or somebody else messing with our elections, this seems like a great way to do that. So should we trust the Chinese Communist Party-tied app called TikTok to police misinformation? I would answer that one no. You can answer it any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Now, let me tell you about these EV charging ports. You might remember that Joe Biden has said he wanted to have 500,000 electric car chargers that were going to be installed all over the United States of America to make it easy for the people who had, I think, foolishly decided to buy an electric vehicle to be able to recharge their vehicles. Because one of the biggest objections to buying an electric car, the range is not nearly long enough and there aren't enough car chargers. Well, the electric vehicle buyers out there, they've had a little bit of a free ride. I mean, not all of them, and I know that when you say that, they get their nose out of joint. But when you have EVs that don't make sense to build, and the reason I say they don't make sense is because it costs more to build than they sell for. So if you're running a charity operation, which is not what the major car makers are doing, say the Ford Lightning pickup truck, which is the electric pickup truck that Ford came up with, beautiful truck. I mean, it looks nice. I don't want it because the range isn't long enough. I've got to recharge it. I can fill up a gas tank in an average of 7 minutes, according to AAA. What is the shortest period of time you might charge a car? Half an hour, 90 minutes, maybe all night to get a full charge. And there aren't enough of the charging ports. So should the taxpayers fund that? I think that's a whole question that we skipped right by, and they just put it in law, said, we're going to allocate $7.5 billion to building electric car chargers. Well, that was in 2021, 4 years ago. So about a year and a half later, we were talking about how they hadn't built a single one. They had $7.5 billion. So they had the money. They have the technology. They have the ability. And Tesla has been out building with private money car charging ports all over America. I'm not a big fan of Tesla, but I have to give them their due. They were doing that. How many car chargers have been created in America in the last 4 years with the $7.5 billion available? That would be 400 of them. Joe Biden wants to have 500,000 by 2030, just 4.5 years from now. So you say they've had 4 years and they got 1/1,000th of the job done, and they had the money, they had the technology, they had all of that, and yet they have only set up 400 EV charging boards. What I'm kind of hoping is that the Trump White House can actually get the Congress to claw back, cancel out the contracts, and claw back as much money as you possibly can. And you know, this is such a bad situation that even Democrats, I'll cite one of them, Democrat Senator Jeff Merkley, Democrat, came out and about the program and the fact that it had been rolled out so badly, quote, "That is pathetic." In June of last year, June a year ago, he said, "We're now 3 years into this. This is a vast administrative failure. Something is terribly wrong. It needs to be fixed." Well, no kidding, Jeffro. They've got $7.5 billion, and that's all they managed to do. So as of today, 400 EV charging ports across America. Because even if they have the money, even if they have the availability, for whatever reason, they haven't been able to get the job done. Maybe it's time to go back in Congress to the drawing board and say, should the American taxpayer subsidize the creation of the refueling stations for electric vehicles? I know they don't call them refueling stations, but that's what they are. 1 hour of charging with a level two port, which is the kind they're planning to build, delivers only 25 miles of range, far lower than the 100 to 200 miles delivered by a DC charger. The problem is the DC chargers work very, very slowly, and they cost a lot of money. So are they going to be able to get to 500,000 charging ports when it's taken them 4 years to get to 1/1,000th of that job done? I don't think so. Let's go to Ron. Hey, Ron, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Well, you were talking earlier about people being evicted and, you know, all these programs, et cetera. Let me clarify something for you. There's something amiss here. It seems to me that every time we turn around, all the taxes are being raised, and the Democrats are saying, well, the public voted for this. Only the public voted for this. So if the public has all this money, they seem to have so much money, they want everything taxed, from their food to their gas to their property, you name it. But somehow we always need these programs because people can't afford anything. Make up your mind. Either they have so much money that they don't need all these programs, or they need all these programs and some of these lying here about the taxes being raised.
No, I think what's happening, Ron, is that people go out and they say, I want to spend my money on all kinds of things. And I mean, there are lots of distractions in life today. You want to spend your money on social media? You want to spend it on a fancy iPhone? You want to spend it on getting your hair done or nails or clothes or a car or all those other things? If your first priority, I remember when I bought my first house, I was 21 years old. I could barely make the payment. I sat down every month and the first check out of my checking account went to pay my mortgage because that was important. These days, people apparently think their lifestyle comes first and paying the rent, that comes somewhere down the line. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Lars Larson Show.
Ronald Reagan knew better. Do you?
All of it began the first time some of you who know better and are old enough to know better let young people think that they had the right to choose the laws they would obey as long as they were doing it in the name of social protest.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you and a real pleasure to welcome back to the program Leland Vittard, who's host of On Balance with Leland Vittard and chief Washington anchor at News Nation. And Leland, usually you and I talk about whatever's going on in the news. I want to ask you about Kamala Harris, because a few hours ago we found out that the entire state of California is breathing a sigh of relief. She's not going to run for governor of that state, but the thinking is that she is planning instead to make one more run for president in 2028. And I thought, you know, this could be some really good entertainment, and it really says, I think, some terrible things about the state of the Democrat Party, that it's even possible that she will be a candidate one more time for president of the United States. I want to get your take on that first.
A lot to unpack there, as usual, in that question, Lars. Anybody can run for president who wants to. Kamala Harris did once and didn't make it out of Iowa, because she didn't make it to Iowa, meaning she had to drop out before the caucuses. The reason Kamala Harris is not running for California governor is because she would lose running for California governor, showing at least a slight amount of sort of personal understanding and reflection. Everyone knows that if she thought she could win this California governor, she'd take it, because it's a lot easier to raise money and to run for president as a sitting governor than it is as a vice president who lost. Just ask Dan Quayle.
But if she can't win California governor, and California is one of the major states you need to win, especially as a Democrat, since California hasn't gone to a Republican in quite a while. I think Reagan may have been the last time, although I could be slighting the
Bushes.
You're
talking about the primary or the general?
No, I'm talking about, I'm talking about in the general, you've got to get those electoral college votes.
Well, gets a lot. Kamala Harris is going to win. Any Democrat, insert blue face, is going to win California. Like, come on. So, no, the issue is that she's not going to win anywhere, because the problem with Kamala Harris in her both 2020 race for the White House and her 2024 race for the White House is voters got to know her. And it's a very simple, you know, equation. Okay, which is both times. She had this huge launch. She skyrocketed in the polls. She was everywhere. She got tons of media exposure. People were exposed to her. They didn't like her. It's a very simple equation.
Well, they didn't like her. Plus, she doesn't make sense most of the time. I mean, Leland, I've spent times. There's that. But what happens when she just starts babbling that word salad? I almost got tired of running the sound bites of her, because we'd have one more session of 30 seconds of Kamala, you know, spewing words out of her mouth that didn't make any sense at all. And so we're going to have another round of that in 2028 if the Democrats are foolish enough to give her the nomination again.
Okay. Well, what I would say is, Democrats will not be foolish enough to give her the nomination, because they weren't foolish in 2020. I get why Republicans like to talk about this. They would be oh so lucky to have Kamala Harris as the nominee.
Oh, I'd love it. I'd love it.
In 2028. But, to me, the glee on either side of the other side doing something that, or somebody on the other side, I'm not sure, at least the people that I spend a lot of time focused on, which is the middle of America that sort of believe in right and wrong, not left and right, they don't really care.
Well, I care in this sense, Leland. I said it says sad things about the state of the Democrat Party, because if there were any really strong candidates who were already emerging, and this is about the time they would emerge on the Democrat side of the aisle, I think she'd say, I'm not going to be able to win in that crowd, so I'm not going to do it. The fact that she's considering doing it suggests, well, they don't really have a lot of candidates. Gavin Newsom seems irreparably damaged. I guess there are a few other people like Shapiro of Pennsylvania, but they don't have a lot of strong candidates who seem to be, that guy or that gal could run for president.
Yeah, and in 1989, Bill Clinton was a washed-up governor in Arkansas who had just given a terrible speech at the DNC that bored everyone to death, and no one thought. Like, 3 years is a long time, Lars. Be careful before you count how many decades Republicans are going to control the White House. I would say, just because you said the Democrats don't have anybody strong, how about Andy Beshear?
Yeah. That's a good point. Might be strong enough. Have to get a lot of name familiarity, because I know who he is, but I don't. Do you think most Americans do?
No, but most Americans didn't know who Barack Obama was before he gave the speech at the DNC 4 years earlier.
And sounded like a Republican, didn't he? I mean, like a light Republican, a country club Republican.
Well, that's what he is.
Yeah. That's why he talked all about climate change and then bought a house for his family next to the ocean, right?
Who doesn't want to live next to the ocean?
Well, anybody who believes that the ocean is going to rise inexorably, as Al Gore would tell us.
they didn't really believe that.
Hey, by the way, let me ask you, in the news media business, are they ever going to come to their senses on Trump? Because, look, I've had my disagreements with Trump as well about some other issues, and I've told my audience what they are. But the economy is going on reasonably well. GDP is growing. Unemployment is low. The Treasury is taking in, it sounds like they'll take in $300 billion this year in tariffs. Trade deals are coming together. I mean, things, you know, there are some little things on the edges, but for the most part, things are going very, very, very well. And yet it seems to me that most of the people, not you, but all the other people in your end of the business on the cable news and everything else, they wake up every day and say, what kind of negative story can I do on Trump today? And I wonder at what point they're going to try to preserve their own credibility, saying, if I keep telling my entire audience that it's raining when in fact it's sunny outside, at some point I lose something.
I'm kind of confused that you think much of America's media has credibility with most of America. They don't. They have a lower approval rating than Congress. But what I would offer you about the economy, which I think is an important point you brought up, you could have said the same thing. In fact, Democrats and much of the media did say the same thing about the economy under Joe Biden. The stock market's going up. GDP growth is big. Unemployment is low. The economy is how people feel.
Yep.
And I'll just give you a couple of other things, okay? Car payments. Your delinquent car payments, delinquent credit cards, and delinquent home payments are the highest they've been since 2008. The American people are hurting. That's not to say that things are not perhaps getting better. That's not to say that the things Donald Trump are doing isn't working. But if you're sitting there trying to, as now a quarter of all groceries are bought on installment pay apps like Clara, if you're sitting there having to pay for your groceries by installments, you don't care how much the Treasury is bringing in, and you sure don't care what GDP growth is. That's where the economy matters. That's not to say that things aren't going well for Donald Trump or they're not going better than they did for Joe Biden. But Republicans would be very, very well served by, as I would say, as we used to say in the Middle East, halas on the victory lap when so many Americans are feeling a lot of pain.
Well, and you notice I didn't mention the stock market because, I mean, one of the things I think Republicans are under-mentioning is the big, beautiful bill preserve those tax cuts. And I kept telling my audience, hey, you think those are no big deal? They mean somewhere between $250 and $500 a month for the average family. If you lose them, that's how much more you pay. If you keep them, that's how much less you pay. And that's a significant difference for average families, especially the ones that are trying to buy their groceries on the installment plan. We always used to joke about taking out a mortgage before we went to the grocery store. Under Joe Biden, we almost got there. That's Leland Vittert. Leland, thanks very much. Host of On Balance with Leland Vittert and the chief Washington anchor for News Nation. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Naysayers on this program always go to the head of the line. And you can vote in our X poll. You'll find the daily poll question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Told, Lars has welcomed naysayers for 27 years, but occasionally...
Who is this person who speaks to me as though I needed his advice?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Wednesday. Always glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. This segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles. And you pick the closing date, NickShivers.com for details. Now, our X poll today, should we trust TikTok, owned and controlled by the Chinese Communist Party, to police misinformation in America? My answer to that is no. You can answer it any way you like. You'll find the X poll question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Let me go first to Josh. And if you want to jump in, naysayers go to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Josh, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I enjoyed that last segment you had.
Thank you.
I did want to provide some input. I'm from Oregon. I moved to Kentucky, and then I came back. And
that had to be a culture shock.
It was horrible. In fact, I will tell you what. The cost of the U-Haul from Southern Oregon to Kentucky, just take a guess at how much the 26-foot U-Haul cost.
I've rented that. Usually that truck, I think, goes for a couple of $100 a day, and then there's mileage. So I couldn't even take a guess, but there are a lot of people moving out of Oregon and probably not nearly so many moving out of Kentucky. Am I right?
Yeah, it was $14,000. When I came
Holy
back, it was
cow.
$2,000. So there you go.
Wow.
Yep. And I lived in Lexington. Very liberal town, made Portland not look liberal, honestly. I learned a lot when I was there. However, I'll just kind of cut to the chase. Kentucky was a very well-ran state. Oregon could learn a thing or two from them. Everybody talks about Andy Beshear running for president. I didn't learn a lot about the overall government when I was there, but when I was there, I worked for the Energy and Environment Cabinet. And I will tell you, Andy built that place, and it is the most overly bureaucratized department I have ever seen in my life. Oregon is not as saturated with employees like them. It was unreal. The giant, beautiful building they built on this hill for them in Frankfurt is just amazing. And you just think, how could they have the money for this? Well, they got a $1 billion budget, essentially. It's like $985 million.
And what, by the way, tell the audience, what is it they expected the energy cabinet to accomplish?
Well, when I worked there, I didn't really do anything. You're able to work from home 3 days a week and not work. And the 2 days a week I was there, I really didn't do much. They don't have much work for you. I was probably at 0.2 FTE. Now, they don't pay as much as Oregon. They paid me $50,000 a year to work in the water department. I mean, but it was efficient. It was efficient. The onboarding process was great. But I will tell you, you could tell a Democrat built the place. It was just a monstrosity of bureaucracy. And if he runs, that's going to be something that follows him. It was unreal. So,
well, I hope it does, because, Josh, that's one of the problems with almost everything government touches. I mean, I've told people before, if you want to get more houses built, there's an issue that applies almost nationwide. You know, that America's about 1 million houses a year short of building the houses we need to accommodate the people who are coming into the economy. Not illegal aliens, but, you know, 3.8 million high school graduates per year right now. And that number will decline by about 10% over the next 15 years. But if you've got 3.8 million kids coming into the economy and you've got in-migration as well, legal in-migration, you got to build a lot of houses for those people, and there aren't enough. And yet, when you tell the government you want to do this, they immediately say, okay, we'll block out 10,000 square feet of office space. We'll hire a whole bunch of people. We'll buy computers and chairs and phones and everything else. And you say, when are you going to get around to actually making something happen for housing? And the answer is, well, we'll get to that. But first, we have to assemble this giant staff, have a four-color brochure. We've got to, you know, do some advertising. I mean, they do all kinds of crazy stuff. And as to actually accomplishing the mission, they're not there. And yet you look at private enterprises that do the same thing, some of them non-governmental, you know, non-profits, and they'll work on a shoestring and accomplish 10 times what the folks in government do. And you would think that the government would say, let's run this thing lean and mean, and let's get most of the dollars down to the bottom line, you know, down to what we're actually trying to accomplish. They don't do that. They're looking for a sinecure, you know, a job where you show up, you move some paper around, and you say, I'm part of the solution, even if you never actually solve anything.
And I want to just add one more thing before you go to your next call or your next segment. They had the Department of Education on the top floor. Because of the Department of Education in this building, please look it up on your spare time. It's a gorgeous building. A government shouldn't have something like this with a state, I just think, in my opinion. But the Department of Education was on the fourth floor. Because of that, we had two armed state troopers in the foyer of the building. The doors lock at 6 p.m., so in theory, if you walked out of the office and you tried to get back in, you cannot get back in. And it was all because of this paranoia about people coming in and, you know, getting them. The Department of Education, and they ran the show, and they're not even part of the Energy and Environment Cabinet. They ran everything. It was a very interesting.
Well, consider the fact that part of the scam that was run against Trump and against Americans which is now being discovered, was the National School Boards Association got a request from the Biden White House. Write us a letter. Tell us that parents who show up angry at school board meetings are potential domestic terrorists. You write the letter to us. We'll use that to justify sending the DOJ and the FBI after all those parents saying, if you even stand up and object at a school board meeting, you might find yourself in a jail cell. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson. 319.
15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at the level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
So the only people that are crying are the mediocre white boys.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and your emails in just a moment. But first, I want to talk about the new, relatively new, governor of the state of Washington, and that is Bob Ferguson. Now, there were a few times over the last couple of months that I said, hey, Bob is sounding amazingly like sort of a moderate Republican, very moderate Republican on a couple of small issues. But then on the big stuff, when it comes to tax hikes, well, he signed into effect the biggest tax hike in Washington state history. And then the government immediately told us, oh, by the way, having hit you with the biggest tax hike that Washington state has ever seen, we're already going to tell you in advance we're $700 million short heading into the next session. So prepare for more taxation. I thought I'd talk to my friend Ari Hoffman about that. Ari hosts a talk show in Seattle on our affiliate station, KVI, there. Ari, welcome back.
Glad to be here, buddy. Thanks for having me.
So tell me about Ferguson, because at this point, it sounds like an awful lot of voters, even in a liberal state like Washington state, are having buyer's remorse over Bobby.
Yes, absolutely. So this is a Cascade PBS Elway poll. He's very correct most of the time. He's usually spot on in our neck of the woods. One of the reasons he's so accurate is because his polls are weighted with more Democrats. Why? A 50-50% sampling of Washington state, which is deep blue, makes no sense, and you'd have inaccurate numbers. So this poll is weighted to the Democrats. I believe 49% of the people who filled this thing out were Democrats. About 30 and change were Republicans, and the rest were independents. So when you take these numbers of the majority of voters are unhappy with Bob Ferguson, that means a huge amount of them are Democrats. And when the poll shows that the issue they're most upset about is taxes, it shows a route for success for the GOP, which is stop fighting over who's Trump adjacent, stop fighting over who's less of a rhino, more of a rhino, and just focus on the taxes and have like Washington citizens for against taxes and other PACs be the ones who run these ads. Don't put the GOP logo on them and just run them from now until election day for the next 4 years, every single cycle, naming everybody who voted for higher taxes, everybody who caused the gas prices to spike to the third highest in the country, everybody who voted for the largest tax increase in Washington state history, name and shame, and then say, here's the person who's going to vote against them.
Oh, and by the way, can we throw the Climate Commitment Act in there, the CCA? Because seeing as we're now seeing, I think some of these taxes are new enough that people actually, if they're reacting this way to in an anti-tax mood to taxes that have barely taken effect. So you haven't had the chance to say, wow, this is really weighing me down just yet for many people. But on the Climate Commitment Act, to have pulled $4 billion out of the pockets of about 7.5 million people. $4 billion. And you say, and what are they doing with it? And it's not hard at all. We've done it here. I think you've done it as well, to say, well, what are they spending it on? All these worthy projects. No, just big piles of more government and nothing that actually even addresses the climate very much at all. So I think that's another opportunity to say, not only are they taking a lot of money from you, they're spending it on junk.
Well, Lars, here's what I think we should do. Everybody in Washington State, our gas prices are a buck higher than the national average outside of Seattle. Seattle, they're even crazier. So here's what I recommend everybody do who's listening to your show right now. You take a picture of your gas prices every time you fill up and just post it to social media and say, thank a Democrat. Thank Jay Inslee. Thank Bob Ferguson. Thank a Washington Democrat. And that will reach more people. And if everybody does that, it's better than the stickers you put on the pump. Because one, that's vandalism. And two, they're just going to remove it unless people will see it. But if you post that on your social media, all your friends will see it. And maybe they'll start asking about why. Because I know every single time I fill up my car, I curse Jay Inslee, Bob Ferguson, who tried to hide it, don't forget. He didn't want the utility companies noting the Climate Commitment Act on your utility bills, that they were going to spike those. And every time you go to the grocery store, Lars, every single thing here is brought in by truck. And if it's brought in by truck, they have to jack up the prices.
And by the way, Ari, let's throw into this. The hidden part of that tax is that all your food is grown with fossil fuels. The fertilizer comes from natural gas, the diesel that powers the tractors to either plant or harvest, the food trucks that take it to processing. The processing of it is done with electricity, which is up in cost. So all those costs are buried. They're embedded in the food you're buying. And then, as you point out, the food actually gets to the store where you buy it on a truck powered by fuel on which there is a tax. And at least for the ag end of that whole equation, the ag end was supposed to be exempt from the Climate Commitment Act. And you remember when Inslee said, oh, well, you know, our Department of Agriculture hasn't figured out how not to tax the farmers for the Climate Commitment Act on fuel. And you say, well, hold on. That's something that's within the governor's control. So Bob Ferguson, as head of the executive branch of government, could say to the Department of Agriculture, this is in the law. You're going to start applying this, and we're going to exempt the farmers one way or another the way the law said they were required to be exempt. He hasn't done that. He could. He it sounds like he's not planning to, unless you know differently.
No, you're 100% right, and it's even worse than that. You know how they said the light rail is going to be so good for the environment? You know that even the cars for the light rail get brought in by truck. I was driving past one on the highway a couple of years ago. I'm like, oh, I know where that's going. That's going right to Seattle. Here's something else. Another report came out recently that says that the Seattle, Tacoma, Bellevue area has the highest inflationary pressure in the entire United States. And the reason why is the energy costs and the food costs, which are essentially the same thing, because as you just described, all the gas prices going up makes all your food prices and all your other goods prices go up and skyrocket. And as long as that keeps happening and it's tied to inflation, those numbers are going to keep going up. My father-in-law was talking to me the other day. He said the gas prices are insane. How come they're going down everywhere else and they're not going down here? And I had to tell him they're never going to go down here again unless we repeal the Climate Commitment Act, unless we repeal this gas tax, because they are tied to these metrics that make it always go up.
No, and when you start to realize all those embedded costs and then the overt ones like pumping gas and saying, why is it a buck a gallon higher in Washington State outside of Seattle and higher still inside Seattle? And you got to get that across to people and say, well, who did all that? Well, it wasn't the Republicans. There might have been one or two rhinos in there, but it was all the Democrats. It was the action of two Democrat governors. One of them is still in office. Do you want him to continue in office? And his poll numbers can go down even more. Ari, thanks very much. That's Ari Hoffman. He hosts one of the shows on the affiliate station we're on in Seattle. That's KVI. Glad to be with you on a Wednesday, and always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Coming up on the Radio Northwest Network, we got to talk about one particular example of a man who's been one of the leaders in the battle against ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Well, it turns out, not a big surprise, he is in fact an illegal alien. And most recently, he apparently tried to carjack a car from a man whose toddler was sitting in the back seat. We'll get to the details of that and your phone calls and emails. 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
I couldn't sleep. New plan of action. Just mug all the Dems.
I got jumped like 5 weeks ago walking home in New York City. And when I woke up, I genuinely felt like a different person. Because I was on the floor, I was bleeding, I was concussed, and I was 100% Republican.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
To be honest, according to the conversations that I've had with immigration officers, we're all criminals to them just because we weren't born here.
But you do have a record.
Yeah, but just like I do have a record as a juvenile.
As a juvenile. Now, the guy's name is Guillermo Medina Reyes. Guillermo Medina Reyes has been a San Jose tattoo artist. He's been in a battle with ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. He's been one of the organizers who's ginned up trouble against ICE down in the San Francisco Bay Area. And since July, Bay Area immigration rights groups have been rallying to draw support for Guillermo Medina Reyes. They say he's been targeted for deportation due to his organizing work after serving time in prison for attempted murder. Now, consider all this. He says, oh, yeah, I have a record, but it was only as a juvenile. And I want to make sure that you heard what I heard in what he said. Play it again, please.
To be honest, according to the conversations that I've had with immigration officers, we're all criminals to them just because we weren't born here.
But you do have a record.
Yeah, but just like I do have a record as a juvenile.
As a juvenile, because he's laying back on that. And he's right. If you talk to the ICE officers and say, if somebody comes into America without legal process, without a visa, without a green card, without going through the process to enter the United States with the permission of the United States and its representatives in Congress, yeah, you're a criminal. He seems not to understand that. Oh, yeah, I've got a record, but only as a child, as a juvenile, and therefore we should ignore the fact that you've got this record. Well, guess what's happened? Well, while they were rallying for support for this guy because he's headed for deportation, what did he do? Well, Guillermo Medina Reyes, according to the police, tried to take several vehicles. One of them was from a man whose toddler was sitting in a car seat in the back of the rig. A big rig trucker. He tried to steal that truck, according to the police. And a woman who was trying to pump gas. So this is a guy who came into the United States illegally. He's been working in the United States, and he's been rallying support against ICE because of their deportation efforts, and he is, in fact, an illegal alien. On Sunday, this is when it happened, police in Berkeley, California, arrested Reyes after he tried to take vehicles from several people. This is from the news reports in the San Francisco Bay Area, including a man whose toddler was in the back seat. Now, The Scanner, which is the publication that reported the arrest, said that police and witnesses talked to them. They reviewed hours of emergency dispatches to piece together a preliminary report. Sunday morning, Berkeley Fire was dispatched to help a man who appeared to be having medical problems. They said the man, who had braids and tattoos but no shirt, ran off as the authorities approached. As firefighters watched, the man tried to steal a Prius at a gas station before running away. According to dispatch, authorities caught up to him, took him into custody, tried to make sense of what had happened, and now he's been arrested, and now he's being released again. This is the kind of situation we're up against. You've got dangerous people in this country. You've got a guy who seems to think the fact that he committed a crime and was sent to prison, his record is as a juvenile, and yet he's one of the people out there rallying support for the illegal aliens in this country and actively working against people who are trying to deport those people. Then I want to jump from California to Minnesota. The Minnesota Star Tribune. Their headline, and this seems to be very common among the major newspapers in America, almost all of them tilt to the left. And as you'd expect, in a liberal state like Minnesota, the Star Tribune, which is the major newspaper in that state, tilts even further to the left. Here's what their headline says. ICE wants to deport Wisconsin driver charged with being drunk and causing a crash that killed two Minnesota teens. And if you read that headline, you'd say, well, yeah, I would imagine that if somebody is in the country illegally and then he goes out and drives his car and he's driving drunk and he causes a crash and he kills two teenagers, yeah, that's not exactly the kind of person we want here. Well, what do we find out? about the what the Minnesota Star called a Wisconsin driver. In the same way that there was Kilmer Abrego Garcia was described as a Maryland man, this Wisconsin driver is actually an illegal alien. He is from Honduras. He, according to police, drove drunk on a revoked license. How he got a driver's license, you figure that out. He had open containers of booze in the car, and then he drove the wrong way on a highway. And he killed two teenagers from Minnesota. So why would the Trump administration want to deport him? I would think that everybody in America would want to deport this person. And why in the world would media outlets like the Star Tribune, why would they go out and run stories like this? Oh, it's outrageous that ICE wants to deport this guy just because he drove the wrong way on a highway, drunk, and allegedly killed two teenagers. The newspaper, by the way, the Star Tribune, because it is a liberal state, it's the home state of Tim Walz, the former running mate of failed presidential candidate Kamala Harris, has defended criminal illegal alien, including sex offenders, whose photos and sex convictions were online. It has sympathized with criminal illegal aliens convicted of sex crimes, including sexual abuse of a minor, as a mere cultural misunderstanding. Now, I'm going to suggest something to you. More than 20 years ago, I remember talking to the Mexican consul. And the Mexican consul is the official, because you can have an American consulate in a city. In most cities, you don't have a full embassy for a foreign nation. But Mexico has consulates in a number of cities in America. And I was talking to this Mexican consul. He represents the country of Mexico. And I was talking to him about a young man who was locked up in jail at the time. This is more than 20 years ago. And he said he didn't understand why this 24-year-old man was locked up in a jail cell and was not being allowed to leave and go back to his job. And I said, because he's accused of raping a 14-year-old girl. And this Mexican consul, who I think probably didn't realize the import of what he was saying in the United States, he said, well, back at home in Mexico, 14-year-old girls, they're perfectly fair game when it comes to who you want to date or have sex with. And he's explaining all this to me, and then it's just a big cultural misunderstanding. Here's the misunderstanding. If you come to the United States, just like if a United States citizen travels to a foreign country, you don't get to say, well, back home in my country, doing this is okay. If you travel, for example, to some of the Middle East countries, and you say, I'd like to get a beer. And they say, we don't serve beer here, sir. Beer is not allowed. We're a Muslim country. If you say, I'd like to go to a church service on Sunday morning, and they say, well, we don't have Christian churches in this country. Well, I do back at home. Guess what? You're not at home anymore. If you've come to the United States from a foreign country and you think that the same rules that apply at home apply here, where you can go out and sexually abuse children because it was okay to do it in Mexico, that's absolutely crazy stuff. You shouldn't be allowed to do it. And this idea that the newspaper is suggesting it's just a cultural misunderstanding, sexual abuse of a child is okay because, well, back at home, if you like it back at home, head back home and you can operate under the rules of that country. When you're in the United States, you apply our rules and our laws or you go to jail and you might just get deported.
The Lars Larson Show. Lars has a face for radio.
He's hideous.
Wanna see? Follow him on Instagram at the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. You know, frankly, I think the economy is looking pretty decent. I know that Americans are concerned. Prices are still too high. That's the result of the last 4 years. But inflation is down to something that is somewhat manageable, closer to about 3% or just below. You've got economic growth that is outstripping what the economists had expected to see, about 3% in the second quarter of 2025. That's a nice, healthy growth rate. Now, of course, I'm not an economist, but I thought we'd consult on this with Ryan Young, who's a senior fellow with the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Ryan, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Lars.
Hey, as a non-economist, is it reasonable to say if inflation is relatively low, if unemployment seems to be in good shape, if people are getting hired, and if our GDP growth rate is pretty healthy at 3%, what's not to like about any of that?
Yeah, we're doing all right. There's always room for improvements. And I think one lesson, because remember that the economy actually shrank in the first quarter. It wasn't just slow growth. The economy actually shrank. Mm-hmm. So what we had essentially is when you have a little bit of stability after the first quarter's chaos, you get better results. And I think ahead we're going to find somewhere in between. If you average out the first two quarters, we're looking at about 1.2% economic growth. And for reference, 2% is about the average. So you want to be around 2% or better.
So we're a little bit low right now.
Yeah, not catastrophic, not that bad. Room for improvement. I think a little more stability would help. That said, manufacturing has been contracting for 4 months in a row. There are some warning signs on tariffs. The labor market's holding up. I hope it continues to do so. So we're doing a little bit better than I thought. There's plenty of room for improvement, but at least it's not utter economic destruction.
So, and in fact, wasn't that what we were hearing was going to happen? That people said, well, if you slap all these tariffs on foreign countries, this is going to get in the way of the economy, and we're going to have real chaos. That was the prediction, was it not, about 3 months, 4 months ago?
Yes, and fortunately, the president did not go through with those level of tariffs. Tariffs are still up quite a bit. I'd say they're up between 5 and 7-fold overall. But we're also looking at an average tariff of between 10 and 15% when the president was threatening, 20% average, 25%. And remember the 145% tariffs on China?
Yep.
That we briefly had?
Yep.
That kind of tariff would cause the destruction we're talking about. Fortunately, the president pulled back and did much more moderate tariffs than people were fearing.
Well, let me ask you something, Ryan, because, I mean, some of economics is almost psychological. I mean, people can they feel bad about the economy. They don't spend money and the economy turns bad. In the case of Trump, when he came out and said, I'm going to hit China with 100, and they've gradually edged it up. He said, I'll do 50. The Chinese retaliated. He retaliated back. They ended up at 145, and then it came back down. Isn't that the kind of thing that most people have done from time to time in negotiating? You walk in and say, I'm not paying a dime more than this for that car. And you know you'll go higher, but you can't tell the guy you're buying the car from, nor can the guy who's selling you the car say, yeah, I'd be willing to let it go out the door for this number, but you're not going to tell the customer, you know, I'd let it go for this. Neither side is going to give it up. Is this just the president negotiating and he couldn't actually say to the public, by the way, I'm not really going to charge these tariffs, but I got to make them believe that I will hit them with those tariffs and that will get them to a point where we can make a deal?
It's possible. That is still a work in progress. Negotiations are happening right now. But if one of the sticking points was access to China's rare earth minerals, well, they never put up a wall around those until we put a tariff on them out of the blue. So in a way, who made the first move there? But August 12 is the next deadline for U.S.-China negotiations, and I'm hoping there'll be some drawback on both sides because we need those rare earths, and at the same time, when the U.S. puts up tariffs, the first victim is the U.S. They're
now, Ryan,
your policy.
Ryan, you're pretty tolerant of my crazy idea, so let me throw a crazy idea at you. Is it a good idea for America to get 90% of its rare earths from an avowed enemy of the United States?
It is not, and that is why instead of tariffs, we should be pursuing regulatory reform.
Well,
there are all kinds of permits and red tape and paperwork that make it all but impossible to open any rare earth facilities. And in fact, the one facility we do have is not allowed to refine the rare earths that it mines. We have to send those abroad off into China for refining and then get ship it back here. So that's a regulatory problem, not so much a tariff problem. So what I
Well, except that let me ask you how it becomes a tariff problem, because if you say, well, we've got to get regulatory reform, which is a fancy word for Congress and the agencies have to say, yes, we'll change the rules, except that when American companies go to them and say, hey, we need to get these rare earths here in America, and they say, aren't you just buying them from China at a very good price right now? And they say, well, yeah, we are, and they're still available. So Trump's tariff work ends up with the Chinese putting a wall, to some extent, around the rare earths. And then when the folks from the manufacturing side in America go to Congress and the agencies and say, hey, get rid of this red tape. We've got to get this stuff here. China's putting a wall around it over there. It's very important for us to do this. Maybe you add to the urgency to change the rules?
What a tangled web we weave.
But it was solving a Rubik's Cube, isn't it? Isn't economics like a Rubik's Cube? Every time I get red to the right side of the block, green is where it shouldn't be.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. That said, I think the administration deserves a lot of credit for taking unilateral moves on environmental policy and loosening a lot of restrictions and permits. This week, this is out of my expertise, but you might have seen this week the EPA announcing that it was going to vacate the endangerment finding about carbon dioxide emissions. That could be the biggest deregulatory action in history. That kind of stuff is happening with or without tariffs. I'd love to see more of it.
Well, and isn't it nice to know that every time you exhale, Ryan, you are no longer putting an evil pollutant into the air? Because I exhale all the time, and my car also puts out a little bit of CO2, and it was a stupid ruling, the endangerment ruling. We're going to be put in danger by plant food. Oh, really? How's that? Well, the EPA says so, so it becomes fact at that point. I mean, I love seeing them roll that back and then telling California and all the other states, no, you don't have to outlaw gasoline cars. That stuff isn't dangerous. Stop it.
Yeah, and to bring it back to tariffs, a good principle of regulation is if there's a problem, you try to look for the least harmful, least costly way to solve that problem.
Yep.
And I think that applies to tariff policy. If we have a problem, whether it's access to rare earths or American manufacturing or anything else, look for the least costly policy that might help the problem. And when the president has a tariff hammer in his hand, everything looks like a nail. I don't think he's making that calculation. We have this goal in common. Is a tariff the best way to achieve that goal? I don't think he's doing that in a lot of cases.
Well, you may be right. I mean, maybe you can read his mind better than I can. But, Ryan, if somebody wants to get a raise and they go to the boss, say, boss, I'd like a raise. And the boss says, no, I like employing you at your current salary right now. I'm perfectly happy. And then you go to the boss and say, hey, boss, if I don't get a raise, I'm going down the street and I'm going to work for somebody other than competitive enterprise. At that point, you've just unleashed, you know, the heavy duty, the heavy hammer, and said, if you don't pay me more, I'm going to walk out the door. All of a sudden, you've got the boss's attention. Is that a good metaphor?
In a way, it's a little bit like the president's grocery store metaphor, where if you want to shop at our store, you have to pay a membership fee.
But it works for Costco. It works for Costco, and that's run by liberals.
Yeah, but in this case, it's backwards, because the U.S. isn't the store. We're the shoppers. We're the ones buying things from abroad.
Well, how about this? If you want access to all our happy, well-paid, most affluent single group in America or in the world, if you want access to those customers, you got to pay the membership fee. Hey, Ryan, thanks very much. That's Ryan Young from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and you're listening to the Lars Larson.
Sometimes the truth is awkward.
You know what the Muslims call the Jews in the Quran? The children of Israel. Well, this is awkward.
Now, more truth from Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. In a moment, I'm going to take the risk of using a word like intersection. It's usually a liberal word that I try to stay away from. But I think there's an interesting intersection in some of the things that are happening in the Pacific Northwest the last couple of months. In any case, glad to get your phone calls and emails. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. And this segment of the show is brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialist, Oregon Medical Centers. I also would like to see you cast a vote in our X poll. We put up a brand new poll question every day. A lot of people vote in it. Today, the question is, should we trust the Chinese Communist Party-tied TikTok, the app that is run by so many people? I don't have it on any of my devices. I never have had it on any of my devices. As long as it is a Chinese Communist government controlled app, I'm not going to use it. And I'd like to remind you of a couple of things. They haven't yet resolved the question of whether or not TikTok must be sold to an American owner. Now, that was put in law. The deadline has been pushed back a number of times. But at this point, TikTok is still controlled by ByteDance. ByteDance answers to Beijing. And TikTok is a spy device. But then it gets worse. Today, TikTok announced that for America, remember, there is no Chinese government version of TikTok in China. TikTok in China is wholly different than what you see on TikTok in the United States. And that should make you a little bit suspicious just to begin with. That is, we have this great company. It has this great app. Except we're only going to let the app operate as a place where people sell things or state their opinions or put up funny videos of one kind or another. That TikTok is in America. It does not exist in China. In China, TikTok is primarily a do-it-yourself or instructions from the government. It is an entirely different thing in China. Now, when somebody says, hey, this is the stuff you're going to be consuming and your people are going to use, but we don't allow that kind of thing in China. What did they announce? They announced today the public launch of what they call footnotes, which is similar to the community notes feature of both X, Elon Musk's outfit, and Meta, which used to be Facebook. Now, what is it supposed to do? It's supposed to allow the people who are using TikTok to be able to correct misinformation. The only problem is that as long as the company is controlled by the Chinese Communist government, it's a great way to shape public opinion. I can't count the number of times that people I know, even family members I know, have said, well, I saw on TikTok the other day. I mean, ask yourself how often you've heard somebody say, how do you know that's true? Oh, I saw it on TikTok the other day. Well, if the Chinese Communist government is controlling what appears on TikTok and what is not allowed to appear on TikTok, and if they're allowed to fact check or correct information on TikTok, then the Chinese Communist government is able to correct information. That is, you can find out, oh, yeah, all those forest fires, they're caused by global warming. They're not caused by bad forest management. Oh, solar and wind, they're the best way to go. You might ask yourself, if China actually believes that solar and wind are the best way to go for energy, then why is it that China, which manufactures about 80% of the solar panels and the windmills that generate electricity, somebody actually said they're not windmills. Windmills are for pumping water, and I'm not going to get into that. You know what I'm talking about, the windmills that generate electric power. If China thinks they're so great, why is it that China is breaking ground on a new coal-fired electric generating plant once a week? They have been for years. They apparently plan to for years. It would be like finding out that somebody runs a restaurant, and then you say, well, how's the food? Oh, I don't eat there. I just run the restaurant. Other people eat there. I wouldn't eat the food there. This is China saying, you should put up windmills. You should put up solar panels. Oh, and by the way, send us hundreds of billions of dollars of your taxpayer money that are subsidizing the windmills and the solar panels, but we don't use that stuff. I mean, that stuff doesn't begin to generate the kind of power that we need to run an industrial country like China has become. In other words, they play 100 different games on the rest of the world. China will tell the rest of the world, why, we are still just a developing country, and you have to give us the latitude, you know, because we're just a poor developing country. No, maybe 30 years ago, certainly not today. They're a modern, industrialized, technological society. They have a middle class that numbers about 400 million. In other words, China's middle class is bigger than our entire population in the United States, and not all of our population is middle class. So Should you trust the Chinese Communist Party controlled TikTok to police misinformation in America? You can find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Now, about that intersection, two news items that I want to point out to you. News item number one, Intel. Intel, the driving force in semiconductors for almost 60 years, and yet they're cutting back dramatically in one of their biggest locations in Hillsboro. They've cut back a lot of staff. They say that the amount of money they have, they don't have enough money coming in to pay the bills. So they're cutting back. At the same time, four In-N-Out Burger locations are opening up in the Portland Metro. And you say, but I like In-N-Out Burgers. Well, so do I. But what happens when a place like the Pacific Northwest starts to lose its manufacturing hubs like Intel, and all it's gaining is service jobs? Well, in that case, you better learn how to say, do you want fries with that? You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson.